Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
At Emory University, we are guided by a shared purpose and a spirit of collaboration. Students here push each other to think creatively and work together, because we believe different perspectives lead to new ideas. We know that Emory's mission to create, preserve, teach, and apply knowledge in the service of humanity takes all of us. We do together better. Learn more at emory.edu.
Anything she did, if it wasn't what he wanted her to say, she got a belt whooping. She screamed. She had a belt whooping. She got her head shoved into a pillow on her bed. And then he started to...
Now this is all happening on the same day.
Okay. Yeah. And then it started to be... Well... That's not... doing enough. Because she's still screaming. So he told me to go run some water in the bathtub. Some cold water in the bathtub, and I did, and he said, okay, the next time she screams, we're going to take her into the bathtub, and of course she's going to scream the way he was hitting her with that belt. I mean, I accidentally got in the way of it, and it bruised me once or twice that day. I mean, she had... He didn't stop with the belt at some point. It was wherever he could hit her. Her legs, her back, anywhere. And if she screamed, it was he picked her up, sometimes by her hair, take her into the bathroom. And... he laid her in there, and she started to scream. Or he had her stand up and wanted her to say a certain phrase, like, can I have some milk, please? If she didn't say it, he would smack her with the belt. And the moment she would scream, he would take her and shove her into the water.
I'm Emma Kenny. Welcome to Bang to Rights, the deep dive crime podcast, which takes you through some of the most heinous crimes the world has ever seen.
That interview footage is of a mother starting to break down, literally confessing that she was involved in the destruction. That's the only word that I can use, the destruction of her absolutely gorgeous 2-year-old little girl in the most torturous of deaths that anybody could experience. The discovery of baby Grace on October 29, 2007 is when this case begins. So a fisherman is just going about his business, he's walking along the shores of West Galveston Bay, and just as we do that, human intuition, when we see something, it just looks a little bit out of place. That's exactly what happens. Something catches his eye. He goes and looks at the shape of this object that is seen floating. It's a blue plastic container. It's basically got wedged between rocks and it's also partially submerged in the sea. It's floating upside down. Now, for a lot of us, we wouldn't even think about going and investigating. What's the problem at the end of the day with a floating box in that area and environment? It's got nothing to do with us. You just walk on by, but for some reason, he doesn't. For some reason, that box absolutely captures him and he has to go over to it. It's the kind of box that you'd keep toys in or Christmas decorations in a closet in. And he's curious. He just has that natural curiosity. And he goes over and looks inside, but he never expects to discover one of the most horrific sights anyone could find themselves discovering. First of all, when he turns the box over, he turns it upright, he hears this thud. And that in itself makes him feel that there is something singular within it that is weighty, at least for being in a box like that. Now the lid is duct taped shut, so people don't want you looking in it. It's as simple as that. When he opens the box, he notices there's a tied plastic bag, but also it's a smell, like an earthy smell. He said it was like decomposing meat. Initially, this fisherman assumes that it was going to be somebody's deceased pet. Somebody had basically got rid of their pet in this way. It wouldn't be an appropriate manner, but nonetheless, obviously to him, that's the most logical reasoning as to why that thud's occurred and why that smell is emanating from it. So he cuts it open just to check on whether he's correct. He uses fishing pliers that he had on him. And at that point, he just is met with the most overwhelming stench of decomposition. And then, devastatingly, the first thing he notices was a small child's shoe. Now, at this point, he realises he's got to speak to 911 immediately, and he does so. Jimmy Gillane is the chief of police, who's the first responder to the scene in this case, and this is going to feel and sound devastating, because what brings him to understanding of what is in that case is the flashing lights that he sees inside the container, because he automatically realises they're coming from shoes of the dead child in the box. And he actually said the reason that he connected with the flashing lights being shoes and kids' shoes was he'd recently bought his niece a pair of them, which is just heartbreaking. Those flashing light trainers and shoes, every kid wants them when they're a certain age. It's a very antithesis of being a child, being excited because they flash when you're walking. And here they are in this plastic tomb where a child has been discarded. Now, that officer opened one of the two plastic bags inside of the box, and he again confirmed exactly what the fisherman had believed was there. He confirmed it was a young child. He saw the leg of what he believed was a very young child, in fact. Also, he noticed that she was curled up in an unnatural position. Now, at this point, Mike Berry and Tony Hansen, who are the detectives from the Galveston Sheriff Department, they then go ahead and retrieve the body from the scene.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Valspar Ultra starts at just $29.98 a gallon. So we've got you covered when your daughter wants to paint her room again. After last year's masterpiece of a unicorn mural.
Dad, please.
Or when you realize that maybe you went too hard on the greige.
I miss color.
Or when you were sure you wanted a home gym, but your elliptical is currently hanging your laundry.
What about a home office?
Shop everything you need for your next phase with Valspar. Available at Lowe's. Price varies by sheen.
And even though it's very obvious that the body is badly decomposed, they can tell it's of a very young girl, around 2 years of age. She had blonde hair, blue eyes. In fact, her hair was apparently barely clinging to her scalp. The clothes they knew had been bought from Target. There was a floral top, white lacy socks with those flashing shoes on. And they actually didn't have a name for this child. She had literally been thrown away by rubbish into the ocean. But they dub her as Baby Grace because they want to give her a name. They want to make it personal. This is a child. This is somebody's child. But nobody knows whose. Now, they're researching at this point who it could possibly be, what had happened to her, because tellingly, and it's very tellingly, at the time, there are no reports in the area for a missing child that matched the description. So essentially, the people who should be looking for her, at least if they're local to that area, aren't actually looking for her. Let's talk about the investigation, because it begins blind. They have a little baby's body, essentially. And from that, they need to extrapolate it to finding out exactly what happened and indeed if somebody's responsible for her demise. Now, the Galveston County Medical Examiner's Office, they're the people who carry out the autopsy of Baby Grace. It will be completely of no shock to you that many of the investigators and detectives had to leave the room. The sight of that broken, beautiful little girl was so horrific and so heartbreaking for them. Now, when they do the autopsy, it does deliver the news they expected with respect that this child had been horribly abused and murdered. She had 3 fractures to her skull, 1 on the back of her head. Examiners also said that those fractures were similar, and this is just absolutely breathtakingly evil because they suggested the damage was similar to the damage that would be caused from falling off a roof. So just imagine being on the top of a roof on a house and falling from that roof and landing on your head. That's the kind of impact that we're talking about where these injuries are concerned. You also won't be surprised to realise that because of that kind of injury, there was evidence of brain hemorrhaging. This little two-year-old body had multiple rib fractures, some were healing, others were new. So that means this child has gone through a sustained period of physical abuse. She also had a fractured arm. She had injuries to her spinal column, and they believed when they did the autopsy that these would be consistent with her being thrown or slammed onto a hard surface. And just imagine the damage you would do to a child when you are doing that in a forcible manner. They said there were no signs of accidental drowning, so she had been obviously deposited. She hadn't ended up in that situation because she'd found herself in the water. She was clearly placed there. And so they ruled the cause of death as homicidal violence, including blunt force trauma to the head and torso. And they did confirm during the autopsy that they believed that she'd been dead for a while before discovered, so a few months at least. The detective who started investigating this case actually said the most upsetting thing for him, aside from the obvious that I've just described, was the fact that this child had just been tossed out like trash. And the fact that we know the physical trauma was clearly inflicted repeatedly and it was clearly sustained over a period of time adds to the horror that this two-year-old little girl endured, because that's what we're talking about, a two-year-old little girl. Now, I have a two-year-old child. I genuinely have a little girl of that age right now, and the idea that I could even raise a hand to her, I've never harmed a hair on her head, I never will do, completely anti-striking children in any context, at any level. But to see her fear, it's something that I find really provoking when I do these cases, to see her fear in her eyes and to know that I caused that, that would be devastating to me. And to imagine a child going through such a protracted period of trauma and abuse, to know that the perpetrator will be looking at their face, because children don't hide their feelings, they're very obvious with them, and you can see when a child is distressed, and to be able to continue to distress them further and further and further, and for their distress to actually exacerbate your anger, it speaks of a monster within. It's almost demonic when I think about individuals who harbour that possibility and capacity. Now, Lois Gibson, who was a forensic artist, was unbelievable in this case. So being a forensic artist basically means you bring to life the bones of a human being. You are able to look at the way that their skull is, the way that their face is formed, and you will put together a picture to try to help the identification of that individual. So this forensic artist is asked to draw a picture of baby Grace. They want to aid the identification process. She actually had to see the images of that beautiful, but now heavily decomposed toddler. And even though that's all she had to go on, this woman managed to create the most unbelievable picture. She brought life back into baby Grace's eyes with a drawing. She drew her hair and it was just beautiful and blonde. And she had these piercing blue eyes, really smooth skin, which we all know young children do have that beautiful, glorious skin. And she gave her a childlike smile, because so often children are smiling, even children in horribly abusive homes smile regularly, which is devastating to know. But we all have a spectrum of what we're used to, and even when you're living in the most dark and horrific of scenarios, you still find moments of joy. Now, Gibson's drawings get released across the nation. Also, they obviously give information about where the body is found and the concerns that they have, and they're kind of beseeching the nation that if anybody out there recognises this child or is missing a child in their family, and it could be baby Grace, please get in contact. They also put out a picture of the box that she was found in, because they are things that people know. If they go missing, if you do happen to have storage containers, you tend to know how many you've got. And if one's gone missing from your environment and you've also not seen a child relation that you would usually see, then understandably that can provoke a reaction. They also put out a picture of her shoes. They note that the little girl was between 2 and 3 years of age, that she was female, that she weighed between 25 and 30 pounds. They noted that her hair colour was indeed blonde or light brown. Also, they imagined that it was wavy. And Gibson had actually really struggled with drawing that picture because she had a daughter of the same age at the same time, and therefore she felt that she could really connect with not only the fact that a child had been so horrifically abused and lost their life, but that she could put herself in that position of loss. She had a similar aged baby to baby Grace, and she could imagine the absolute vacuum and void that would occur of grief and loss in such a situation if she had lost her own child. And yet here we have this baby that's just been disregarded, as the detective said, just like rubbish. The sheriff was actually seen at a press conference holding up a pair of her shoes to the crowd, and also the drawings that were done by Lois Gibson, incredibly talented artist. And the main emphasis of that was to just plead for anyone to come forward just to help them find out who baby Grace was, to identify her. She deserves her name. She doesn't deserve to just be lost in a cold case out there. They even ran a DNA test on her because obviously a lot of people these days use places like Ancestry or MyHeritage where they send off their DNA samples, and that means that very often you will be able to find matches in certain places. And there was even some suggestion that maybe this could have been the body of Madeleine McCann. I would say that wouldn't play out in reality because obviously Madeleine McCann, well, I was a very, very young mum when Madeleine went missing. But nonetheless, you can understand a body of a small child is found that fits the blonde hair, the blue eyes, and of course the age frame. And people do put two and two together and make six. Now, Texas Rangers, the FBI, and also the National Center for Missing and Exploited Children, every single one of them try to help. They want to help the Galveston PD in the investigation and for that investigation to come to fruition and identify the child and also find out what the hell happened to this child, because it was not accidental. We know this is homicidal death. Now, CNN, they run features on the mystery of baby Grace, the amazing Nancy Grace. We're all aware of who she is. It doesn't matter whether you're from America or otherwise. Nancy Grace stands out as one of the true crime commentators that has stood the test of time, and she takes no prisoners. Well, they covered the mystery on her HLN show, basically just demanding justice, urging any viewers to just come in, get in contact with leads, because the smallest detail can lead to the biggest breaks in these cases. Also, a $5,000 reward was offered for literally any information that could just lead to the child's identity. And of course, most importantly, on top of that, the arrest of her killer. Because the thing about being a child killer is it's obvious to all of us. It makes you a reprehensible human being, but it also means
brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3-bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort-style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
You're a human predator. If you can kill the most vulnerable in our society, then you have the potential to kill anyone. If you're a domestic perpetrator in a sustained abusive scenario which leads to the death of a child, you can kill anyone. So there is an individual walking around freely who is highly dangerous, and that person needs to be found. Now, apparently, the anonymous tip lines literally flooded with calls, but sadly, most were dead ends. Now, after the pictures of the clothing she was wearing were released to the public, apparently a lot of calls came through to report lots of different information. And of course, the picture had gone out at this point that had been done by the artist. So very clearly a picture that if you have a child that you haven't seen for a long time that's missing from your family and you're suddenly realizing that a body's washed up and this baby looks just like the child you haven't seen, it's going to provoke a reaction. And it does. So one call comes in from a woman from Ohio called Cheryl Sawyers. And she believes that she knows the identity of baby Grace. You can imagine, can't you, the investigators at that moment in time, because you are just hoping, you are praying, you are just literally asking the universe to provide you with an answer because you are so desperate to bring this baby back, to make her the human being that she was, and to also make sure that whoever did this to her pays the ultimate price. So somebody actually coming forward and saying, I think that I know who this child is and I'm a direct relative, well, that just gives you lines of inquiry you wouldn't usually have. And it means that you are that closer to finding out exactly what played out in this case. She said it was the sketch. The sketch looked like her granddaughter, and her granddaughter she hadn't seen for a period of time. The granddaughter had moved away to Texas with her mother, Kimberly Trenor. Now she said her granddaughter's name was Riley Ann Sawyers. She also said that she'd last spoken to her in July and she hadn't seen her since because her mother had moved away with her new partner, Royce Ziegler. She also said that they'd moved to Texas, and at that point communication became sporadic, inconsistent and actually vague, and it had got to a point where she was really concerned about what had happened to Riley in particular. So she gave family photos with Riley in, she gave them to the investigators. She also, very importantly, allowed them to run DNA tests between her and baby Grace to confirm whether the DNA did indeed match. But of course, this is going to take a few days. So they have this information, they can't confirm the information, but it feels like a really strong lead. However, another break comes in the case, and this is the biggest break possible. Because a woman named Kimberly Trenor arrives at the police department with her lawyer. Now, I'm just going to throw it out there. If somebody turns up at a police station accompanied by a lawyer, it tends to be that they're going to either admit something very huge and they've taken advice, or they're going to deny something and want to plead essentially a no comment scenario. But at this point, this woman of her own volition has walked in. Now, she doesn't tell them initially what she wants to speak to them about, but once her interview actually begins, it is absolutely devastating. The horrific events that she recalls literally turn your blood cold. I do not struggle on the whole to watch interrogations. Often I'm just so taken by the deceptiveness of the individuals who are telling their story to police that I kind of concentrate, focus on that as opposed to the gory details of what happened to the victims that they harmed. I have to tell you, I've struggled enormously watching the video of the two perpetrators involved, and you will see parts of that within this case. But if you watch the whole thing, you really do need to consider how you will feel afterwards, because it is very invoking of feelings of rage and sadness and devastation. And she tells the story so eloquently, she's a really effective communicator, that you feel every blow to some degree that that little girl suffered. So she basically admits during that interview that she's there to say that baby Grace is actually her daughter. Now, bear in mind, investigators at this point are unaware that baby Grace's grandmother has also called them recently. So this, as far as they are concerned, is completely new territory. They hadn't linked her with the grandmother. And you can imagine, again, it's just holding their breath and allowing her to tell that story because it's so imperative in this case. Now, it turns out that the grandmother, who has been in contact, is completely correct, because the identity of baby Grace is indeed Riley Ann Sawyers.
He wanted me to shove her head underwater, and I found myself doing that and hitting her with the belt because he was there. Because that's what he was doing. It just seemed like it went on and on and on. And no matter what she did, she was going to get smacked with his elbow. At some point, he stopped it. So he could give her some Tylenol and put ice on her.
So let's talk about the background of her parents, the perpetrators in this case. So Riley Ann Sawyers, first of all, as a child, was this really curious and affectionate toddler. She was born in Mentor, Ohio on March the 11th, 2005 to Kimberly Dawn Trenor and Robert Thomas Sawyers. Now, Kimberly Dawn Trenor, when she was growing up, people said she was one of those kids that was quite isolated. She was very introverted. She was very shy. People considered her emotionally withdrawn. And because of this, she found it hard to connect, in person at least. So in social situations, she didn't thrive. She was born in the late 1980s. I don't have an absolute date of birth, but she spent most of her time in Mentor. She lived with her mother, Cheryl. Kimberly's personality, like I said, did not lend itself to a positive peer experience and interaction. She wasn't confident. She didn't know how to forge and form positive relationships in her day-to-day life, and her peer network was almost non-existent. And the social awkwardness meant that she found it very, very difficult to break into new peer relationships. She struggled to connect with peers at school, and the place that she found a release and a relief when it came down to connection and spending time with people was online. And I know there's a lot of negativity out there. I know there's a lot of people who feel that the online world is actually the devil, and it certainly has horrific, demonic aspects to it. But it's also a place where young people in particular who struggle to have those connections in real life actually can practice connections online and can connect with people and forge friendships all over the world. And actually that can really help with their confidence, and it can make a massive difference to their psychological well-being. So it's not all doom and gloom. And certainly for Kimberly, it's really effective. She does spend a lot of time playing video games. She's in chat rooms. She's talking on online forums. So that social awkwardness, that lack of connection that she has in her physical life, that isn't something that plays out online. She thrives there. And one of the things that people have said about her intellectually was that she wasn't academically gifted. But it's very clear when you listen to her talking, albeit she's talking about the most dark material in her interrogation, she is very eloquent, she's intelligent, and apparently she was very creative. And we all know that when it comes down to academic intelligence, it literally measures a tiny aspect of who you are and really doesn't measure your intelligence whatsoever. So she thrives in other areas. And unfortunately, because she's spending a lot more time online than in real life, and she isn't homing her skills, going out and actually trying to use the things she's learned online in that physical world, she disengages even more from the outside world as she gets older. And part of that will be because she gets a lot of positive reinforcement from the connections that she experiences online. Now, she does have a boyfriend. Obviously, she gets pregnant with Riley, but their relationship was said to be inconsistent. So it was one of those on and off relationships. But bear in mind, when you are young, you are going to have relationships which are on and off. But you know, when people are young, and she was young when she was in this relationship, you do have lots of arguments. You haven't got anything to go on for the most part. So everything can feel so absolutely emotionally charged when really 10 years down the line, it wouldn't even bother you. So it's not unusual to have these kind of relationships where you go through these extremes. Often people can see these extremes as a sign of love and connection as opposed to toxicity. And like I said, for the most part, we grow out of it as we get older. Not everyone does though, do they? We all know people who never matured past that point and literally spend their lives on the highs and on the lows. Now down the line, Cheryl, the grandmother in this case, will tell investigators that despite the fact they had a relatively poor relationship with one another, Riley was really well looked after at that time. So she was fed well, she was nurtured well, she was cared for, she was loved. Now Riley, as a child, was not a challenging child. She was known to be really happy, really playful. She was just a typical baby, massive infectious giggle. And she was somebody who was obviously being brought up by both mummy and daddy. And even though they didn't have a relationship that lasted, that should have remained and retained part of her experience, but it doesn't. And it doesn't because she ends up being taken by her mother to Texas. Now, like I said, bear in mind, we've got Kimberly having Riley at the age of 16 to 17 years of age. She was still in high school at the time, and her partner, Robert, was only slightly older. They were all living, in fact, with the grandmother in this case, Cheryl. And apparently Cheryl was a massive influence over Riley. She would often take care of the caregiving responsibilities. She understood that the children in this case, although now parents, were still kids as far as she was concerned and needed a lot of help. She also said that once they split up, they were both very much involved in raising Riley. However, during the time when Kimberly ended up single, one of the things that she apparently expressed was that she was quite frustrated. She didn't like being a single mother. She was at times somebody who occasionally voiced resentment about how her life had been apparently, quote, derailed by an unplanned pregnancy. I think we can all have sympathy and empathy for that. You're going through your teenagehood, not even your late teenagehood, and you find out that you're pregnant, you have the courage to some degree to go through with a pregnancy, and then you suddenly realise the amount of time it takes when you have children to look after. Look, it is challenging for lots of us. The sheer time commitment when you have a baby or a toddler is massive, and often you can feel frustrated because you don't get a lot of stimulus because you're the one doing all the work and you're not necessarily getting a massive amount back, and you often feel socially isolated. These are all things that are very true and they're all very normal, but for her, it feels like she feels like she wants somebody to come in, swoop her up, and to make her feel safe and do the work for her. And that just doesn't happen in these situations. You have to grow up, you have to take responsibility, you have to become accountable for your actions. She chose to have a baby, her job to do the work. Now, around late 2006, turns out she began spending increasing amounts of time online. She was apparently withdrawing from real-world connections, and Robert moves out because basically Kimberly files a domestic abuse charge against him. Now, Robert denies the accusation, said it was just an argument, it got blown out of proportion, and the charge was actually reduced to disorderly conduct. Now, he was desperate from the moment that he lost access to his daughter to get that back. He wanted custody of his daughter, but Kimberly continued to hold full custody. That made it impossible for Robert to gain custody once she'd actually moved away to Texas. And what is even more breathtaking in this situation is that somehow within a very short period of time, she actually meets and marries a new partner and moves to Texas. And this guy's name was Royce Ziegler. Now, we don't absolutely know whether she met him when she was still in a relationship with Robert. I will say, sir.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Certainly, from the man who she meets his mindset, she has the capacity to travel through relationships. So she tries to sort a new one out before leaving the old one. So it could be that she is one of those individuals who always wants to be in a relationship. When things are going wrong in one, she finds another individual to move forward towards so that it makes the breakdown in the other relationship seem more palatable. But what we do know is that she meets this guy through playing the game World of Warcraft online. And that's a very, very popular worldwide game. It connects people all over the world together and people become quite obsessive about this particular game. I can't comment on the game. I don't play World of Warcraft. I just know super popular. Now, this relationship moves really, really fast. And like I said, I think that comes down to the fact that Kimberly has these frustrations. She's a single mom. Economically, she's struggling. She's desperate for some kind of companionship. And he basically is the prince in shining armor as far as she is concerned, because we all know that we like to make myths up in our heads about potential relationships. It's not based in reality. We have absolutely no evidence that this person is a knight in shining armor or the Black Knight who's coming after us. We just assume, because it's in line with our dreams, that this is how it's going to work out. And as we know, act in haste, repent at leisure. Now, like you would imagine, as they've connected online, they spend a lot of time chatting online, and then they're calling each other and having these lengthy phone calls, and then eventually she invites him to come and visit her. So he comes, visits, they get on, and at this point their relationship just blows up essentially. It moves so quickly. And there is always a big red flag. And I guarantee now that somebody is going to be watching this right now going, well, Emma, you can say what you like. I met a guy 1 week, married him the next week, and we're 45 years deep into our relationship. I get it. Some people have those sliding moments of perfect synchronicity. They connect, they get together, they stay together. But it's rare. It's really rare. And for the most part, the reason that we take a little bit of time before we move completely across the country to be with somebody who's a relative stranger is because they're a relative stranger. And so you kind of want to avoid doing things that kind of have massive impacts on your life, and particularly if you've got a child, their life, and you want to think, let's think about the repercussions of these actions, let's think about the consequences that might play out, and let's remember, we always have time. Yeah, Kimberly doesn't get that memo. She's like, I'm going. And that literally is what happens. He basically says, come and live with me in Texas. And she basically accepts that offer without any consideration. She just leaves. In fact, the grandmother in this case, Cheryl, said she just left. One day she was here, the next day she was in Texas, and she took Riley with her. Now, of course, as a mother, I want my kids with me. It's as simple as that. When I got divorced, it was very clear I could not leave the area that I lived because I had two young children who also belonged with their father biologically as well. And that meant that I had to remain in my locality, at least within traveling distance. That is something that should always be considered in cases where children have access to both parents, because they need to have a relationship with the father. They need a relationship with the mother too. So just moving to Texas is a very self-indulgent move, and it's a very selfish move. And again, what does that tell you about Kimberly's mindset? She's operating with her own needs being prioritized and not the needs of Riley. Even if she tells herself this is for Riley, because this guy's going to give them a great life and so on and so forth, she is still prioritizing her own needs and the myths of what she wants to create as opposed to the reality of what is going to be created. Now, bear in mind, the heartbreak here is that this is the last time that Cheryl, who adored her granddaughter, will ever get to see her alive. Now, this relationship ends up in a marriage. They get married by June of 2007. Like I said, this is super quick. And according to what's been said, certainly by Kimberly, the household that she shared with the man of her dreams, who is definitely not the man of anybody's dreams, he's the stuff of nightmares, it quickly becomes a place of isolation, of control, and of increasing domestic tension. Bear in mind, she's left the only support structure that she's known. She's now economically completely being reliant on him, and that gives him a lot of power in the relationship. But also, she isn't working. And with respect, if you're the main breadwinner in the house and you feel that the child that they've brought with you is costing money and you don't feel responsible for that child because they're not biologically yours, because maybe you're a pretty nasty person at heart and you can't actually feel a level of empathy or altruism towards this child, then you can imagine the tensions are going to grow really, really big. Now, Royce, apparently from day dot, really struggles around the way that Kimberly parents her daughter Riley. And he wants it to be, shall we say, a stricter, more disciplinarian route that they take with Riley. Bear in mind, this guy hasn't got a kid. He's never been a dad. So why he believes that he is the person who can decide the rules and regulations should you wish to have any around your child, it makes no sense. Also, he has not been in a scenario where he understands that children don't learn through violence. Children learn through compassion and love and nurture and understanding and explanation. For him, there is a very simple way. The way you change a child's behaviour is you beat it out of them. You break them. That would be the best way of describing the way that Royce operates. So he wants his house to be really strict. And he feels that Kimberly is weak in this area and that she doesn't know how to parent her own child. And in her own words, the mother in this case, Kimberly, said that she went along with it to avoid conflict. Literally, the key, turn the lock, throw it away. The idea that you would think that was a defense, you're just going to go along with it to avoid conflict. Can we just break that down, Kimberly? Just what did you want to do? Well, I wanted to avoid conflict. So I just went along with everything. Okay, but wasn't there a kind of big conflict in your world? Oh, what conflict? You know, the conflict where he's violently abusing your child in a very conflictual manner because apparently he wants to have strict discipline in the household and she's two and she's a normal two-year-old and therefore will do things that normal two-year-olds do. Do you not think that's conflictual? Yeah, but it wasn't directed at me. So I was like, well, I'll just go along with this. Honestly, I have no sympathy or empathy for any mother who says things like this, genuinely. I don't care how quiet, conciliatory she comes across in her interviews. At the point where she says she went along with it to avoid conflict, she's a diabolical human being. Literally diabolical. She also said that she didn't want to lose him. He was the only one who wanted me. Do you know what? I'm pretty sure there are some websites where you can find lots of creeps. Kimberly, just crack on. Just go on some other websites. Just find one who isn't abusive to your own child. There is a whole heap of weirdos out there who would well and truly take you, but just make sure that as a weirdo, they're nice to kids and you'll be one up on the relationship you've got, kiddo. Honestly, things like this distress me. Because what she's saying is, the child being violently abused, the child being horribly treated, the child living in hell, well, at the end of the day, you could consider that child's needs, or instead you could say, well, what about my needs? I don't want to lose this guy. He's the only guy who wants me. So at the end of the day, I'll let him beat the crap out of my baby girl. Analyze it however which way people like. Throw in as many psychological conditions as you want. Break it down to the bare bones, and that's what's being said. So this, she would argue, emotional dependency and this lack of critical thinking that Kimberly apparently has, shall we say, and the lack of assertiveness that she displays in the relationship, this is going to contribute towards the role in Riley's death. But I have to break it down to a point and position of being a human being and a mother. Any mother would stand in front of a child to protect them. Not even their child, just a child. That's what the definition of a mother is. You can be a woman who gives birth to a baby. It doesn't make you a mother. It's the actions within your maternal being that create that role and that connects that child with you, or indeed at times disconnects that child with you because you don't live up to the roles and responsibilities that are of being a mother. So for me, to have her excuse her behaviour because it was too challenging to actually deal with him in the way that she needed to deal with him and she didn't want to lose him, that just means that she is as culpable and evil, as far as I'm concerned, as he is within this, because her lack of doing is Riley's undoing. Now, down the line, they will do psychological profiles on Kimberly. So in court documents, interviews, etc., they come to terms with the idea that she is somebody with low self-esteem. She's got poor emotional regulation. Apparently, she's got a dependent personality disorder. That is, as it sounds, somebody who's just totally dependent on everybody else. But, you know, other people back in the day would have called them lazy. Lazy. She is lazy. She's a lazy mother. She spends most of her time online doing jack-all with the kid. She doesn't even earn a wage. She doesn't go out to work. So with respect, that isn't a dependent personality disorder. That's just being somebody who's a bit of a waste of space. And the response of that is that you're going to need somebody to look after you if you're not willing to do anything for yourself. It's not a personality disorder. It's an attitude towards living and an entitlement, expecting other people to sort your life out for you. Now, bear in mind, that doesn't mean she's ever been declared insane. It's more that these psychiatric evaluations have highlighted her emotional immaturity. They've said that she's got a lack of impulse control. They note that she would be easily manipulated and also that she had very unrealistic views of relationships. I mean, again, that just sounds very much like excuses that are meant to garner our understanding for why she helped to murder her child. Being emotionally immature doesn't do that. Kids are emotionally immature. They don't go around killing people. Quite the contrary, they tend to be highly compassionate. In fact, they tend to be excellent with their emotional understanding. Lack of impulse control. Yeah, again, that can often just be somebody who's learnt that reactions get them what they want. Also, the fact that she has a tendency to be manipulated. Well, you know, there's also a choice there, isn't there? There's a choice to be manipulated in the direction that works for you. In this case, staying in a relationship that's horrendous for her child, because it means that she doesn't actually have to take action and she doesn't have to pay the bills. And everyone has unrealistic views of relationships. We all get into relationships on the whole believing that this is our Hollywood movie. We're in a rom-com and that lasts for a year. And then real life hits and you grow up. You pull your socks up and you realise that life, even in great relationships, involves quite a lot of stress at times and you work through it because you're a grown up. So I'm not buying in to those psychiatric reports. I genuinely feel that you could deconstruct them. I think that Kimberly, this idea that she's an easy target, also denies her responsibility and culpability. Like, if she was somebody who'd been manipulated in horrible ways, coercively controlled in horrible ways, abused in horrible ways, and then she was killed standing in front of her child, protecting that child at all costs, then I would agree, because that would show that she had a compassionate heart. The fact is, she doesn't care about the fact that her kid's getting the shit kicked out of her. That's the only way I can describe it. Sorry, I did swear then. But with respect, that's what's playing out in this case. But understandably, all of those things, if we're going to add them together, would make her, shall we say, more likely to be controlled by Royce. And Royce himself, very odd man. He comes across like quite an average guy who's around 24 years of age at the time that they met. But beneath that average exterior, shall we say, seems to have been a guy who was struggling with some mental instability. He also really wanted to be dominant in his environment. And one could say he had this fixation on having power in his household, particularly when it comes to the people who live in his household, such as his partner or a child that's been brought into his world. He wants to be in control. And we all know that's a terrible mindset to have. For a start, children are very often uncontrollable, particularly when they're very small beings, because they're figuring it out. That's what they grow into as they grow up and they start being able to communicate and understand the impact of their actions on the world. With respect, when you have children, and I now have four, you do live in chaos 79% of the time. It's as simple as that. And you get used to it. You get used to falling over objects. You get used to Lego being imprinted in your feet perpetually. You get used to things like stains on the wall that you don't quite understand, but you know your child has had some kind of involvement. You have to lock up the felt tips because otherwise your white walls won't be white anymore. They'll be multicoloured. You just get used to it. You don't want to assert dominance. You want to assert compassion, opportunity, growing, safety. These are the very bedrocks of what make children's lives good. But he doesn't feel that way. He wants everything to be absolutely in its place as he demands it to be. Now, he'd grown up in Texas. He was, again, somebody who was known as a loner, spent a lot of time online. He was on the computer all the time. He was on fantasy games a great deal, spent a lot of time on online forums. Also, he liked being in role-playing chat rooms. So these are things I don't spend my time on in particular, particularly role-playing chat rooms. I'm sure they're very innocent, but in my head, there just seems that there could be some kind of weird places that people could go with the old role-playing chat rooms, you know. Who are you? Well, I'm a cat. What kind of cat? I'm a naughty cat. Sorry, I'm going to stop doing that now. It's probably not what they are at all. I apologise for anybody who's in role-playing chat rooms going, Emma, I'm Queen Victoria, and I've got a whole kingdom. Apologies in advance. Now, you won't be surprised that when it came down to his particular interests online, he had a particular interest in games involving authoritarian characters, militarism, and domination, which kind of matches the personality that he wishes he could achieve and the environment he wishes he could create. Because the truth is, he's just a really big bully. You know, when it comes down to it, this guy probably didn't feel a level of power outside of his home and outside of online, so he's created it for himself in a world where he has full control. It probably exaggerates his need for something that was absolutely lacking in his experience growing up. I would imagine that he has huge levels of helplessness that have arrived through experiences as a young person. And as a way of navigating these traumatic feelings, he's built this world where no one can hurt him, where no one can impact on him. And he's bought into it as his reality now, even though it's all online. So then, because of this new mindset, this new boundary that he's created in that world, where he's the leader, when people come into his actual physical world, he wants to recreate that in that space. And it's impossible. It's an impossibility, but you can see how the seeds are planted in his mind in this way, and how that manner online has filtered down into a fantasy that should remain in fantasy, into a reality he wishes to create. Now, bear in mind, it's worth noting he had no criminal record before he got involved with Kimberly Trenor, but people who knew him, they said he was just one of those individuals who struggle with delusions of grandeur and an inflated sense of self-importance. Now, again, I don't know whether they're actual relationships in real life or whether they are the ones that he's experienced online. It could be both. But certainly no one wants to be around people like that. So if you are somebody who's a loner, you're somebody who doesn't have a lot of social experience, this is why no one wants to be around somebody with delusions of grandeur or somebody who thinks they're super self-important. They do your head in. And also it speaks of narcissism, and no one wants to be around a narcissist. And I would say he probably fits the description of a narcissist. You know, he's demanding all these things, but he actually isn't an important person himself. And there is deep inferiority at his core. Now, at the time that he meets Kimberly, Royce is working for Spring Independent School District in the IT department. He wasn't a teacher, but he did provide technical support for the district's network infrastructure. So he's obviously somebody with skills. And that job was a decently paid job. It gave him a degree of financial stability. And this is probably one of the things that leads to him inviting Kimberly to move in with him. Because first of all, he likes power. There's nothing more powerful than having somebody come without any economic opportunity. So basically they're fully reliant on you. That means that you're completely in charge. But secondly, the fact that he has a degree of financial stability enables him to offer that opportunity. Now, he gets fired, unfortunately, just a short amount of time after Kimberly moves in. It's literally a couple of months. Now, that is going to cause stress. Financial stress is one of the big reasons why people get into arguments in relationships. And certainly we have this cooking pot of possibility where his potential is concerned anyway. So it's not going to be a happy situation. Now, I don't know why he was fired, but I do know that it usually takes quite a lot for somebody to get to a point where they lose their job completely. Maybe it was gross misconduct.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Maybe he just wasn't up to the job and ended up getting found out for not being up to the job. Maybe it was because he has some other issues in the background, but it certainly left the couple in a financial state that was fragile. It also caused a really sharp decline in Royce's mental stability. In fact, he apparently begins to isolate even further. At this point, he gets really agitated, he's moody. Also, he becomes very paranoid, and the need to control Kimberly intensifies, which makes sense. Bear in mind, he's lost a level of control, and therefore he's upping the control in environments and areas where he can have a level of control. And that's very typical for those of you who've been in abusive situations and relationships. For those of you who love people who've been in these relationships, you will acknowledge that when things are going badly in the perpetrator's life, they will up the aggression towards the partner because they are stressed. And stress incentivizes violence, and a lack of power and lack of control, which is their biggest fear, incentivizes taking control where you can. And that's exactly what he does. Now, at this point, it really becomes difficult for Riley. Bear in mind, we have this beautiful little two-year-old, this innocent, naive baby. All she wants is food, shelter, and love. That's it. Bit of consistency if you can give it me, Mum, Dad. Just make me feel like today will be the same as tomorrow. Very small things that children need. That's all Riley wants. But he's gonna have a completely different view on that because he believes in discipline above all else. And he decides that Riley is spoilt and she's manipulative. Now just let that land with you. Manipulative. Two-year-old child, manipulative. Now it's funny because I've actually researched child development. One of the things that I did were tests where children choose to lie or choose not to lie. So when they learn to manipulate their environment, two-year-olds don't lie. They might learn over time to say what you need them to say, but as a two-year-old child, you've not formulated an understanding of your impact on the world around you. You are just acting in a way that is in accordance with your development, which is that you were inquisitive and curious and sometimes mischievous because you are exploring the world. You're not 4/5 when you start realizing, hey, if they give me a pile of sweets and they leave the room, this is a test that I did with kids, I can take one of those sweets and eat it. Even though I know that that might cost me all the sweets when they come back, I'm going to do that because I've got poor impulse control and I haven't figured out yet the joy of allowing myself to wait for something. At that point, you will make that decision because you want the sweet so badly, but you hope that when they come back into the room and say, have you ate one of those sweets? You can go, no. And that will lead to being able to have more of the sweets. But when you are two, the chances are you will eat the sweet because you desperately want a sweet. And when they come in and say, have you ate one of those sweets? You'll say, yes. So Riley is not of the age frame to be manipulative. And the idea that you were even landing her with those kind of words suggests that there is something deeply malevolent about your nature and you have a complete lack of understanding about children per se. Now, Kimberly said that Royce basically had a rule book and that rule book was all about how Riley should behave and it will blow your mind. So he had, this is one of the rules, no crying without cause. Any child who cries has cause. That cause might be, I want the chocolate bar. The cause might be, I've hurt my leg. The cause might be, I'm really tired. Now, to the person witnessing it, why are you crying? You can't have the chocolate bar. You've already had three. So your understanding of the situation will be, there's no cause for them to cry. Their understanding is, my world has ended. I'm not getting a Mars bar. Guys, other chocolate bars are, of course, available. That's the reality. When a child is tired, and I know that a lot of you who listen to my channel have kids, but with respect, what is it about kids who are exhausted that means they scream in a way that you believe the neighbours will probably call social services on you? Literally, that's what kids are like. You know, why are you screaming? Because I'm so exhausted. I'm putting you to bed. I'm literally putting you to bed. I'm going to scream anyway. I'm in this really comfortable, cozy place. You're hugging me. But I'm just going to scream because I'm really tired. That's not as far as you're concerned with a cause, because they're in bed, they're all roasty toasty, cuddled up, you've given them a nice drink and you're stroking their head and they're still screaming. That might be frustrating, but in their world, their exhaustion is so enormous, they just can't compute coping. He also says, no disobedience, even minor. What planet is this guy? Well, planet, I've got some military unit that I'm heading online and nobody will ever speak to me in a way that doesn't involve the words, I don't know, corporal. The reality is, it makes no sense. And she can't win, can she? She can't have any disobedience that, again, is interpreted by him through his lens, even if it's minor. Also, mandatory spankings for backtalk or resisting naps. Now, that's ludicrous to even be in the same sentence. First of all, children of two don't backtalk. They don't even know what backtalking is. Again, they're just experiencing their world. And also, every child resists naps. Children resist naps. They get really upset often before naps because you know what? They bloody love being awake on the whole. So the consequence of that is they don't want to sleep. Now, she also said that Royce would frequently accuse Riley of trying to, quote, split them apart. Because Royce is utterly delusional on every level. The only thing that I can say about him is that in this moment. The idea that this two-year-old is so manipulative that she's walking around thinking, God damn it, what can I do to split this couple up? Maybe I'll just cry a lot. Maybe I'll just misbehave in small ways that will really antagonize them. Maybe I'll sit down with a mother and I'll have a three-hour conversation about the issues that I'm finding with her. I mean, come on. Absolutely. She's two. She can't even open a tin of beans for her dinner. She literally can't cross a road without getting killed at this point if it's busy. Because she's too, but apparently she can absolutely compute in her brain how she's going to break up Kimberly and Royce. Bizarre. Now, apparently the violent acts start to escalate over time. But let's be clear, she's not with Royce for a long time, so obviously, these acts of violence might be incremental, but I think they're pretty huge in the increments they make. Kimberly, of course, at this point says that she's just upset that she would be left because he was saying that unless she complied with what was going on, they wouldn't stay together, and that was her main concern. And just to say, after Riley's been killed, Royce apparently began displaying clear signs of psychological instability. I would say they were there before, but apparently he became really, really super paranoid. He stayed home, he avoided visitors. He became absolutely obsessed with destroying evidence. Again, that's not psychologically unstable. In my opinion, just going through the research and what it's been suggested he was, I think that is very manipulative. To use his favourite word, that's manipulative. Obsessed with destroying evidence isn't psychologically unstable. It's, I want to protect my freedom at all costs. I want to take no accountability and responsibility for what I've done. I want to get away with murder. That's what that sounds like he was obsessed with, as opposed to what people are saying about him, where he was apparently just unstable. Now, when the authorities begin asking questions, Royce had basically told Kimberly, you just need to stick to the story we've created. He even provided her with a written script for what to say to the police. So we can say that one thing Royce is thorough, if nothing else, thorough in his deception. Now, after Riley's body was discovered in that storage container I talked about earlier, after it's traced back to the couple, it is worth noting that Royce attempts to kill himself. He overdoses on pills. He also slashes his wrists. Doesn't succeed. Always surprises me when these individuals who can cause such terror and horror and destruction in others fail to destroy themselves. But this doesn't make me feel compassion. This is what I expect from a narcissist. This is what I expect from an individual who genuinely believes he can avoid actually facing the consequences of his actions. That's what narcissists do. They want to prevent themselves having somebody else control their situation. There is nothing more controlling than the authorities taking away your freedom. He also left this rambling suicide note, and it was a mix of denial, blame, and self-pity. So one of the lines read, Kimberly is a good person. She just wanted to be loved. Sorry, I'm not agreeing with that. Kimberly is a bad person and a really bad mother. She put her own needs above everybody else's. Let's just put it into the narrative and context it should be. Now, psychiatrists who later evaluated Roy Seigler described him as someone who exhibited narcissistic traits, delusional thinking, and obsessive-compulsive tendencies. No surprise there, guys. He basically saw himself initially, of course, just initially, as this saviour to Kimberly. And then over time, you know, when the responsibility of having a beautiful little girl kicks in, and he realises that that romantic idea that he had about being the knight in shining armour isn't quite coming through, he then starts to see Riley as this obstacle, that everything would be perfect if it was just him and Kimberly. If he could just get rid of Riley, if Riley should disappear or just start behaving exactly how he wants it to behave, then maybe it could be resolved. But as it is, and as she is, it's a problem. Now, he also made out that it was Kimberly who was passive, that she was the one who just went along with it, but that he was the one who basically directed the violence and enforced the household rules, and also he was the one who apparently made up the plan, which was to dispose of Riley's body. Also, there's a later report down the line from Royce's stepmother, who does validate that he did have a harsh upbringing and that during that upbringing, he did go through punishments and abuse. And do you know what my response to that is? Well, if you know how it feels, why the hell would you inflict it on another human being, let alone an innocent 2-year-old little girl? How does your past not inform your future? It blows my mind, and I know absolutely, without a shadow of a doubt, from my own experience, my research, and also from my interactions with people like yourselves who listen to my channel, I know that 90% of people who go through abuse and punishments and horrific scenarios growing up become the most compassionate human beings, who would not so much as harm the hair on the head of another human because they know how it feels. So I give him no excuse for that upbringing. That should not be something that means you get an excuse for acting in this way with others. Now, Riley's father, Robert, who obviously has lost horribly in this situation, he later said in interviews that he genuinely didn't believe that Kimberly was capable of ever hurting their daughter. He said that she loved her daughter, and I would say, but not as much as she loved herself. I'm sorry. I appreciate that Robert has got a level of understanding and forgiveness potentially for the woman that he once knew, but it's who she became. It is what we are capable of that defines us, and she was indeed capable of hurting their daughter. She wasn't just capable of hurting the daughter. She was capable of helping to kill her and dispose of her body and then to keep a secret until the secret could no longer be kept. So with respect, her capacity was just one that people were not aware of. And believe me, we are aware of it now. Now, when Kimberly is interviewed, it begins obviously with the things they go through initially. What's your name? Where you live? Basically as well to help the detective built some rapport with her. She said that she'd been living in Texas since the May. She's got a very calm demeanor, she's very eloquent. She tells the investigator that she's married to a man named Roy Seigler. He then moves on to asking her about whether she'd ever seen Roy Seigler spank her daughter. She responds yes, but she claims at that point that she would rather stay out of it when the disciplining is occurring. She also talks about how the disciplining of Riley escalated. And the detectives notice that she's very emotional when she's talking about this, but they believe it was less because of remorse and more because she realised that she had been caught. There was an inevitability of them finding out that Riley was baby Grace. Now, she goes on to explain that Royce believed that she didn't discipline her daughter hard enough, so he was going to take it from here. He was going to let her see how a real pro disciplines, stroke abuses, stroke in the end murders a child. Now, as her confession deepens, she starts to explain how he would hit her with belts, different belts, a thin belt, a very thick belt. Also, he'd run a bath and he'd make her sit in cold water. This is a 2-year-old, beautiful little baby girl, and this man is treating her this way, and this is apparently in the name of discipline. And her mother, her protector, her nurturer, the woman that she will love more than any human being in the world, is just allowing this to happen. She also described how Riley would cry and scream. And when this was going on, she was obviously in massive distress. And then when she screamed, he would take that little beautiful girl's head and he would shove it under the water, terrifying her. She also then starts to tell the story of how these abuses had led eventually to the death of her daughter. And that death had occurred 3 months before the discovery of baby Grace's body. Now, during one of the bathtub discipline sessions, she was screaming more than usual. Bear in mind, she's terrified. This is a child in absolute utter distress. She's terrified. She doesn't know what to do. She doesn't know how to change things. She doesn't know how to say the right thing. She's a baby. And every time she screams, he gets more and more angry. In fact, he picks this little girl's vulnerable body up. She's two. And he throws her across the bathroom. In fact, she smashes her head into the tiles in the bathroom. And she describes the crack that she heard when that happened. She was unable to stand after this. She's then begging them to give her the medicine that she usually hates to take when she got sick. And this is because she's desperately thinking as a child, how do I change this? How do I change this? She doesn't know. She's not got the acumen of being an adult. She doesn't understand what's happening, why this is playing out. So she's just promising to do something that they know she hates doing just to try to show them that she wants to behave because she doesn't know how to behave because she doesn't understand the rules. Now, when they give her that medicine, she can't keep it down. And in spite of the fact that at one point, he stops abusing her on the day of her death. In fact, he applies ice packs and basically gives her medicine and tries to deal with the bruising. After a short period of time, it begins again. And the violence is unstoppable. Bends her over a couch, beats her with a belt, absolutely destroys that beautiful baby's body. And then she takes her last breath. He'd thrown that little girl so hard, the abuse had been so sustained and protracted that her little body had given in. Now, Kimberly, she claims it was just accidental. Just taking it too far. I mean, it's what happens regularly in our lives, isn't it? You know, we just accidentally kill a baby. Just took it a bit too far. You know, when I was beating this person to a pulp, I didn't realise if I carried on beating them to a pulp, maybe it would have gone too far and they wouldn't live. She's a two-year-old baby. That's not taking it too far. That's intentionally killing a child or believing you can take them to the edge of death and then wait till they survive that, heal a little so you can do it again. Certainly he'd been doing that regularly. Whilst he was beating baby Riley, you know what she said? She looked up at them and she said, I love you, mummy. And he said the reason that she was doing that was to manipulate Kimberly. Again, it's heartbreaking. I'm sure we've been in situations where our children are struggling with something. They may have to take some medicine they don't like. They may have to have a particular procedure at a hospital they don't wish to have. And often they'll say, I love you, mummy. I love you, daddy, because they want you to intervene. They want you to stop it hurting. And you want to. That's the immediacy of those feelings. You just want to stop it, but you know they have to go through it for their own good. And it's awful. That's the normal provocation of that situation, but not in this situation. Kimberly just accepts that, you know, he's saying that this beautiful little child of 2 years old is manipulating her, so she hears those words and doesn't act on them. And they're the last words, apparently, that she ever heard her daughter speak. Now, once Royce realises that it's gone too far and Riley's actually deceased, he does try to do CPR, but it's too late. At this point, they cover her body in a towel. They then, together, rush to Walmart for supplies to clean the scene. Now, I don't know about you, this is where I've lost all patience whatsoever with Kimberly. The idea that she's just somebody who wants a better life and she's so dependent personality-wise and she's just somebody who's very vulnerable absolutely disintegrates at this moment in time. The only place she should be running is the police station. The only thing she should be caring about is her dead daughter, not how do we get away with murder. They actually came home with bleach. They even poured that bleach down her throat because they wanted to get rid of DNA. They also kept that beautiful little girl's body in the shed for around 2 months in the bags inside the storage box. They also drilled some holes in the box. Then they eventually discarded it into the ocean. And that's where they basically hope it would sink and that it wouldn't wash up. Now, when Royce is brought in for questioning, they obviously have all this backstory now. They know what's happened. They know what Kimball has told them. And they know that he is absolutely responsible for the murder of Riley. But that's not the story he's going to tell. In fact, he comes in this really nice, I'm calm, I'm a decent human.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Being kind of way. And he's asked about Riley and his relationship, and he talked about how good it is with her, and he basically is asked, you know, do you ever do any disciplining? And he's like, oh, you know, we put her in the corner, but really I'll leave it for Kimberly to do that. And then they broach the area of, well, have you ever spanked her? And it's like, oh, no, I don't. And they say, well, don't lie. It's obvious you're lying. And then he's like, well, I did spank her once.
Okay, so you are here voluntarily.
Yes.
Did you request this meeting?
Yes.
Okay.
There was an argument between me and Kim. I basically was giving Kim an ultimatum to fix the entire problem because I was sick and tired of going out in public and Riley was running amok. I wasn't feeling so well, so I stayed home from work that day. And Kim and Riley woke up and they went out to do some errands. They came back. Next thing I know, I hear screaming. And the thing is, you know, it's not my nature to hurt children. I never planned on it. And I wasn't in the room the day when all that stuff was going on.
Do you know how she died?
I wasn't even in the room. All I remember is I heard my name called out that day. Okay. I ran in there, saw Riley on the floor, purple.
Automatically, there needs to be a massive arrow that comes down from the clouds and just hits him repeatedly in the head, going, liar, liar, liar. Honestly, if I was the big GOD, I would definitely create these kind of circumstances. It would be really helpful to the process because you'd know it's absolutely that he's a liar because God sent that information. And secondly, it could cause some real damage to his head, which would make me feel better in this situation. But he's denying ever spanking her. And when he concedes that he did do it once, he's basically just making out that really he has very little to do with any of the discipline techniques that are used on Riley. He then tells them an interesting fact, which is that apparently the reason Riley hadn't been around was that CPS had taken her away. Because obviously the police were like, oh, right, yeah, the CPS have taken her away. Yeah, great, makes sense. Yeah, well, we'll probably just close our investigation right now. Does that make sense, Royce? Yeah. She's definitely gone. She's gone off with social workers. She's totally safe, but we don't know where she is. So just accept that. No problem. Case closed. As if. I mean, this guy is genuinely acting like he's a sandwich short of a picnic where actual prosecutors and authorities are concerned, isn't he? Because they're going to check. Now, investigators did find a letter. And that letter stated there had been instances of Riley being removed from the home because apparently there were sexual abuse instances. But those letters were also found out to not make sense because it was confirmed that she was absolutely under his care and Kimberly's care when she died. So she was present. She hadn't been removed anywhere. Now, in the second interview, his story changes. Of course it does, because he's a massive liar. He claims at this point he doesn't know how she died because, wait for it, drum roll, he was in a different room when she died. As if that's a defence. I mean, I don't know about you, that makes perfect sense. I mean, if I was just in a different room to a child who's being brutally murdered in the next room, I wouldn't hear anything either. I mean, if you're in a separate room, you're not culpable at all, are you? Even when you're listening to the blood-curdling screams and the last breaths of that baby. But basically, his defence is, I have no idea what happened. It was nothing to do with me. It was all to do with Kimberly. So you know, Kimberly, when you're looking for a guy to protect you and you want to be dependent on them, maybe don't hang around a guy who will try to throw you under the bus at great speed, which is what he does. So he basically says Kimberly called out his name. When he came into the room, he noticed, to his horror, that Riley was dead on the floor. And she wasn't just dead, she actually looked purple at this point. Now, the investigators know this is BS. They question him on very specific things. And of course, at this point, guess what he invokes? The old blackout memory routine. Sorry, can you tell us about this particular event? Oh no, I can't, sorry, I've kind of forgotten everything. But I thought you did remember some things. I did think I thought I remember some things, but I've realised now that I've just got this big gaping black hole of a memory where all the important facts and factors are that you need to hear. So I can't help you, unfortunately. It's very strange because you keep changing the story and now your story is that you remember nothing. That's the story. I actually don't know whether I remember that story now. Who are you? Honestly, drives me to the brink in cases like this. So you can't remember anything now. Now, the investigators obviously investigate the digital history of his devices from the home. And guess what they find on those devices? Searches of how to dispose of a body. Now, I know that some of you will be like, Emma, I have actually Googled how to dispose of a body. And also I've Googled how to clean crime scenes. I get it. We are all true crime aficionados here. We want to know these things, but we are not being linked to a murder of a child. So it's very incriminating when these searches happen just after a murder's occurred. Now they also found out that letter, you know, from the CPS about it being removed, it was forged by him on the very same computer. And he was literally thinking he could cover his whereabouts at the time of her death because of this letter. Now CPS had never had any involvement before with this couple, and therefore they absolutely know it's an absolute fabrication. They also uncovered a suicide note that I alluded to a little earlier on, and in this he wrote, I leave my property to Kimberly Zeigler. I take my own life because of guilt for my past sins, which I have confessed before. Just going to throw it out there. I know that people are like, you can just say, I'm really sorry and mean it. And the big Jesus and God will be like, that's cool. You can come through the gates of heaven. I don't really think that happens. I'm pretty sure that this guy, whether he really did confess his sins, would still go straight in the elevator and immediately land in the fiery pits of hell. Just throwing it out there. Just my own belief system. You can have other belief systems, but that's where he's going as far as I'm concerned. He said, I have taken my own life. My wife is innocent. Also, my family can go burn in hell for the stress they have caused here. I take my own life. Well, with respect, if your family do end up burning in hell, they will be your neighbour. So just throwing it out there. But again, how self-indulgent and self-pitying is that? Feel sorry for me. By the way, I'm going to go to heaven because I confessed my sins and now I don't have to pay for any of them. And also, my family are awful. Now, it might be that he had a horrible life growing up and that might mean that he will indeed be a neighbour of some of his family. But again, very strange thing to put in that note and that self-sacrificing level that he's making about his relationship with Kimberly. Oh, she's the innocent victim. She's my wife. She should have the home and so on and so forth. Again, reeks of self-pity. Now, investigators had actually revealed that on the day of Riley's death, the couple, like I said, had gone to Walmart. They purchased bleach, a shovel and a plastic box. That's the box that her body was found in. Now, a technician who visited the home to actually fix the computer, this is sometime after her death, they later reported that they'd actually been round to that home and they had indeed smelt an intense rotting smell coming from the shed area. So literally somebody had been in and thought there is something untoward here. They hadn't reported it, but nonetheless, what a shame. If they had done that, this story would have ended in a very different way more quickly, and she would never have found herself in that watery grave. Now, shockingly, as the investigation progresses, in fact, in one of the interviews where Royce is being interviewed, he admits that Kimberly is pregnant. So Royce is the father, and she is indeed pregnant, and she ends up giving birth to the child while she is awaiting trial. And she's under the charges at that point of capital murder. Now, she has a little boy. The boy was named Sean, and the child's then placed under the care of Kimberly's family. Now, bear in mind, this means that she is a new mother, and apparently this is one of the reasons why the state decided not to pursue the death penalty. Instead, they believed that her spending her life in prison without parole would allow her, shall we say, to reflect on the consequences of her actions. When it comes down to the death penalty in that case, I think it might have been a hard one to push. I really do, because I don't believe that the jury would have felt completely at peace with the idea that she was the main perpetrator, that she was the main aggressor, and I think that might have been a challenge for them to find her guilty, death penalty orientated wise. So life without parole, that would make sense. Now, the prosecution, they absolutely believed that Rose was the more dominant figure. They note the conflicting statements that were given by both parties, and Kimberly is definitely more believable. And because of this, they also feel that they want to try Kimberly and Royce separately. So Kimberly's going to be tried first. So Kimberly's capital murder trial begins in Galveston County. Her defense team do exactly as we would expect them to do. They want to portray her as a mentally battered, dependent woman who'd suffered this horrendous emotional abuse at the hands of Royce Ziegler, and that she felt she had no choice but to obey his commands. So she said in court, "I just wanted for her to behave. I didn't mean for it to go that far." Well, with respect, none of us care. You did allow it to go that far, and you were absolutely complicit in the murder of your child. Now, the state, who was led by District Attorney Kurt Sistrunk, they argued that Kimberly was not just a passive observer, but an absolute active participant in Riley's murder. They actually brought up Kimberly's own confession. Bear in mind, she admitted holding Riley down during the beatings and helping to dispose of her body. Yes, just going to throw it out there. You sound 100% culpable in this crime. But obviously the defence have to go for something, which is that, oh, I was just this battered woman scenario, which is actually unfair to every battered woman out there. Now, the testimony, which shows that she genuinely went out of her way to lie to Riley's paternal family in Ohio, because she said that she'd returned Riley to her biological father when she hadn't, demonstrates again another layer of guilt. She knew she was being deceptive, and she did it anyway to protect him and her. Also, they found a written script in the couple's home, which I did note earlier on was drafted by Royce, so he wrote it. But she was involved in learning that script, so she knew exactly what to say if she was questioned by the authorities. And also, medical examiner's testimony, which detailed Riley's utterly brutal injuries, including those 3 skull fractures and blunt force trauma to the head and body, meant that she stood by and allowed those injuries to be inflicted on her beautiful, innocent child. This does not seem like an innocent woman. This seems like a co-conspirator in murder. Now, throughout the trial, the jurors were shown photos of Riley, both before and very sadly after her death. The prosecution very well argued that no mother, no matter how emotionally dependent, could actually witness such suffering and remain complicit and silent, and chose not to protect her child in that.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.
Situation. Now, again, like I said, her defense focuses on insisting that Royce is the mastermind behind the death. Basically, it's all his fault. It's not her fault. Now, they did add in the factor that her previous boyfriend had allegedly been abusive, so she saw Royce in a more positive light than she should have. She also said in court, "I wish I could take it back. I wish I had stood up for her, but I was afraid of him and I was weak. I wasn't strong. I didn't protect her. And now I live with that every day." Good. May Riley haunts every millisecond, every moment of the rest of your life. Let her be the moment you wake up, the thought that enters your head. Let her be the last thing you think about before you close your eyes, and let her infect your nightmares with her face so you have to live what you did to her again and again and again until you finally take your last breath. Genuinely, that's what I wish for this mother. Now, on the 2nd of February 2009, Kimberly was sentenced to capital murder and life without parole. They said the injuries Riley suffered were horrific and prolonged. The law has spoken, and now this child finally has a voice through this verdict. That was Judge David Gardner, who presided over the case's words. Now, she, at this moment in time, remains incarcerated at Mountain View Unit. It's a woman's prison. It's known for housing some of Texas's most notorious female offenders. So she's in good company with respect. Now, Royce's legal proceedings, he was before trial held at Galveston County Jail. It was held without bond, of course. But on the 6th of November 2009, he was also sentenced for capital murder and evidence tampering. He was also sentenced to life in prison without the possibility of parole. Now, Royce, bizarrely, claimed to have been demonised by the media. Just a bit of demonisation. Sorry, Royce, did you say you're a demon? No, I was saying I was demonised. Do you mean that you're demonised because there's a demon living in your demonic body? No, I'm saying that the press have demonised me. Yes, the press have demonised you because you're actually a demon. Beneath the mask of a man, you're a demon, yes? Because you're demonic in your actions. No, you're doing it again. You're doing what the press have done. Yes, I'm just telling the truth, Royce. I'm just telling the truth. But anyway, he's just apparently been demonic. Could this guy be any more self-pitying? Could he be any more delusional? Could he be any more me, me, me? Yeah, apparently, people have written nasty things about him in the media, and they've painted him as the main perpetrator. Oh, boo-hoo. You know what? You both got life without parole, Royce. You both got the same sentence. So essentially, the law's treated you exactly the same. But, oh, no, I don't like people writing nasty things about the fact I'm a horrible child murderer. Well, don't murder a child, Royce. Get the memo. Oh, a little bit too late. You deserve every second in the hellhole I hope your prison is. Now, Royce's role in the crime absolutely rightfully was viewed as more violent. It was viewed as more premeditated. And prosecutors basically painted the picture of a man who initiated the beatings, who orchestrated the cover-up, and who also exerted psychological control over Kimberly throughout their unbelievably brief and very toxic marriage that led to the murder of her baby. Further evidence also showed he'd actually bitten the child's hand during the beatings, which is just horrific. What an animal he is. And I'm not even using the animal term fairly, because animals are not like this. Now, the prosecution argued the points that Royce had beat Riley repeatedly with a leather belt, picked her up by the hair, slammed her head into the floor. This is a 2-year-old kid we're talking about. Also, that he'd screamed at the toddler for not using the toilet correctly, because I don't know about you, when you're potty training or getting the child toilet trained, when it comes down to the fact that you want to do it in a way which helps them to navigate that challenging territory, scream at them. Just scream at them. We all know that just being screamed at is the way to adjust our behaviour. I mean, if I'm not being screamed at when I'm getting some instructions given to me, I don't learn anything. Literally, the last thing you do in circumstances where you need patience and time and understanding is to get angry and frustrated and scream. It literally is counterproductive to the max. But he doesn't care, because it gives him permission, doesn't it? If he keeps screaming at her because she's not using the toilet correctly, it gives him permission to beat her. And apparently, on that fateful day, that was one of the big triggers, that he didn't use the toilet correctly. So it gave him permission to kill her. Now, after Riley had been murdered, Royce then purchased a plastic container. We know he helped Kimberly hide and dispose of her body. And the prosecution also brought in that script for Kimberly to follow if questioned, which showed premeditation and also manipulation. Also, the prosecution brought in that Royce had told multiple lies to the police and to his own family in the weeks following Riley's disappearance. His defense, of course, they argued the points that he was depressed. He was suicidal. And apparently this was evidenced by his attempted overdose shortly after the police had confronted him. Well, no, he'd been caught. That's why he tried to take his own life, and he didn't even do that effectively. So did he really want to die, or did he just want to use it as an opportunity to garner sympathy? I would argue the latter. Also, his written and verbal confessions, they basically say as his defense, this was made whilst he was in a mentally fragile state. Therefore, they're unreliable. So yeah, apparently everything he confessed to, saying that Kimberly was innocent compared to him, saying that he was the main perpetrator and his sins have been forgiven in this life, they were all confessions that were unreliable because he was in a mentally fragile state as opposed to a absolute knowledgeable state that he's going to be sent through the system and punished accordingly. Maybe that was the motivation with respect. The defense also said that Kimberly had exaggerated his role or misrepresented events to protect herself, but the prosecutor, Kayla Allen, who took no prisoners, said he told her, you need to teach that child to mind. But what Royce Ziegler really meant was break her, punish her, and destroy her spirit. Amen to that prosecutor. That's exactly what he was doing. Also, another prosecutor said he wanted a robot. Riley was a child, and she was punished for being human. This wasn't just a murder. It was a betrayal. A betrayal of the most innocent kind, and that betrayal deserves life behind bars. We were never going to let Riley be forgotten. That's why we named her, why we fought so hard to bring this to trial. She deserved her name back. 100%, 100%. Now, since his conviction, Royce, you will be unsurprised, has filed multiple appeals. He argued that, one, his confession was coerced and improperly used. Two, he was mentally unfit to stand trial. Three, jury instructions were flawed. You won't be surprised to know that all of those have been dismissed and his sentence remains the same. Ad infinitum, enjoy your years behind bars. There will probably be many. And again, let her haunt every second of your being in that scenario. Now, after this story was released regarding the fact that this beautiful baby Grace was indeed Riley, people really connected over this. People felt like they'd personally lost somebody close to them, because it felt so personal, so intimate, so devastating. People actually sent flowers and stuffed animals to the Texas Police Department. They were desperate to show their support and show their sadness for the loss of this child. Riley was finally cremated. Her ashes were returned to her paternal family in Mentor, Ohio. That's where she lived before she was taken, sadly, to Texas. A private memorial service was held in her hometown. It was attended by family and friends, members of the community. And at the funeral, there were photos of Riley smiling and playing that were all displayed alongside flowers and also her favourite toys. Isn't it just devastating to imagine that scenario? She was remembered at this memorial as a joyful, bright-eyed little girl who loved bubbles, music, and being cuddled. Two of the deputies from her case carried a casket. That's how impactful that was. And inside a casket where her ashes were placed, she also had an Elmo teddy. Apparently it was her favourite. She was also in a small pink dress. Her grandfather said, she's no longer just our baby, she's the world's baby. And he also talked about just how incredible the support had been and the love from everybody, and how even though they were dealing with that huge chasm of grief, it had helped to soothe it a little. Jimmy Gillane, the chief officer who arrived at the scene first, said, Riley must have wanted us to find her. Whether it was Riley or God or the universe, because it was so odd for her to have floated those 5 miles across the sea, past all the boats, where a fisherman just happened to see her. That really gets my hackles up, it does. It makes me get goose pimply, like the idea that there's this divine intervention where this baby was going to be found and those perpetrators were going to be brought to justice, as opposed to getting away with murder, which they planned to do. In fact, that place where that beautiful little girl was found by the fisherman, It's now been named Riley's Island in memory of her. I hope as she looks down from heaven, as she's cradled and covered in bliss, that makes her smile. That makes that big, beautiful smile shine forth on her face. Riley's Island, now a place, no doubt, of beauty as opposed to horror. Let me know your thoughts, guys. It's a hard one, isn't it, this one? I really cannot express the rage I feel when I come across these cases. And I hear the excuses and the lies and the fabric of deception that's weaved by these perpetrators. And some of you won't think punishment has actually occurred because they still get to live. But I think where they are living is probably going to be challenging for both of them in light of what they did. And they deserve every moment of pain they endure. Let me know your thoughts as ever. I'd love to know your thoughts, particularly about whether you feel that Kimberly is equally culpable or whether you think I've been a little bit hard on her. Take care. See you next time. Be safe.
Luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen, brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
This podcast is sponsored by IQ Bar.
I've got good news and bad news. Here's the bad news. Most protein bars are packed with sugar and unpronounceable ingredients. The good news? There's a better option. I'm Will, and I created IQ Bar Plant Protein Bars to empower doers like you with clean, delicious, low-sugar brain and body fuel. IQ Bars are packed with 12 grams of protein, brain nutrients like magnesium and lion's mane, and zero weird stuff. And right now, you can get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Try our delicious IQ Bar sampler pack with 7 plant protein bars, 4 hydration mixes, and 4 enhanced coffee sticks. Clean ingredients, amazing taste, and you'll love how you feel. Refuel smarter, hydrate harder, caffeinate larger with IQ Bar.
Go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20 to get 20% off all IQ Bar products, plus free shipping. Again, go to eatiqbar.com and enter code BAR20.